Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service. I'm John Murphy, and for assignment, I'm in France, diving into the world of wine.
We are in the Agly Valley.
Yeah,
Agly is the name of the river. Comes from eagle, because there are a lot of eagles in this part of France, southern France. The Agly Valley is a very interesting valley for winemaking, because first, there are a lot of different types of stones, of earth, which gives the taste of the wine and of the fruits as well. But it stopped raining 3 years ago, 4 years ago. It's the most important problem we have ever had.
Sébastien d'Anjou is driving his battered 4x4 around his vineyards above the valley with its dry riverbed, pointing out the different plots he and his brother Benoît cultivate. Like many winemakers across France, they're struggling with a rapidly changing and unpredictable climate.
It's extreme. The climate, it's becoming more and more extreme. When it rains too much. When the wind blows, it blows so strongly that it breaks everything. When it's dry, it's too dry. When it's hot, it's too hot. So we have to adapt to these conditions and to think about what we can do. Here we are arriving on the one part of the vines. Let's start by the beginning.
Let's go and have a look.
Yeah, let's have a look. Look at the soils. They are dry. Everything is dry.
Sébastien's digging into this.
Yeah.
Dark
very,
soil,
very dry.
Black soil, and lots of stones, but also the earth is dry.
Yeah,
the actual earth is dry.
Think of France, and it's difficult not to think of wine. It's at the core of French culture and identity. The wine industry employs more than 550,000 people. Then there's the tourism vineyards attract and the tax revenue, all worth billions. In many rural areas, wine is the single biggest creator of jobs. But there's talk of a crisis. Wine production is expected to be down 18% this year. In some regions, it's 60 or 70% down. But that's not the only problem. For assignment, I'm visiting two famous wine regions, Bordeaux and Languedoc, to find out what's going on.
If you want to understand something of the struggles that French winemakers are facing, this is a good place to start. Behind me, there's a beautiful old village church, and in front, there's this archetypal French chateau, an amazing old building, Château des Arras, with this lovely curved stone staircase coming down from the front door. And right next to me, there are some vineyards, vines stretching off into the distance. But more importantly, next to them, there are these ploughed fields where there used to be vines, but they've been pulled up.
You see the walls? That's the property.
Yeah.
So that's a particularity of our chateau, is that it's enclosed by a 3 kilometers wall.
And all your vines were inside?
Yeah. We had vines for more than 100 years now. Everything was vines. We had 19 hectares of vines.
So you had 19 hectares, and now you have how many hectares?
A bit less than 3.
Well, you better explain why you've ripped up your vines.
Because I can't make a living with my vines.
This is another family business. Marie-Caroline Rosier and her sister used to tend the vines of their 15th century property, making more than 185,000 bottles worth of wine a year. We're now in the Bordeaux region, perhaps the most famous wine name in the world. It has different so-called appellations within it, specific winemaking areas with their strict rules. Names like Saint-Emilion, Margaux and Pomerol are known the world over and produce prestigious Grand Cru wines, which can sell for thousands a bottle. But that's not the reality for the vast majority of winemakers.
Here we are in Bordeaux, so a lot of people think we are all like wealthy because you've got the Grand Cru, but maybe 96% of the rest are actually small owners. And in Bordeaux, we've got different appellations. Some of them are more prestigious, so the average price of a bottle is quite high, whereas as an appellation like Bordeaux or Bordeaux Supérieur, which is a generic appellation, the average price will be a bit, maybe now 6 euros. But the price of producing go higher, higher and higher because everything we need, petrol to drive the truck, even the price of the trucks are more expensive and everything goes up. But they're always asking for us to put the price down. So at one point, it doesn't work.
Winemaking has become more precarious. For people like the Rosier family, the only way to make lower prices work is to produce enough quantity, especially if you're selling in bulk to the supermarkets or the négociants, the wine merchants. But to get a successful harvest, that means putting your faith in nature and increasingly unreliable weather.
From January, maybe February, when it starts to get warmer, it starts to grow and we're like, the stress comes here, you know, you can feel it. You're like, okay.
You've got your hand on your chest.
So. Yeah, you can feel this the squeeze like, okay, how it's going to be this season, you know? Because you can do your best, but you don't control the weather. And that's the worst bit. In 2017, we lost 80% with the frost. And in 2022, we lost everything, like the 20th of June.
What
15
happened?
Minutes. A storm of hail just ruined everything.
A hailstorm?
Hailstorm. It was like 9:30 p.m., so the sky was black like all afternoon, and I was like, oh my God, it's going to be for us. You know, you wait and you pray that it's not going to be for you, but unfortunately, it went here. The worst of the storm just pulled down here, and the chateau, there was no roof, there was no glass on the window left. Everything was just, there was no leaf left on the vines, on the trees. And I was like, okay, this is it. What can I do?
How big were these hailstones?
They were like that.
So
maybe a golf ball.
A golf ball. But
the thing was the quantity, and also it was very high up in the sky. It was white, like completely white.
And had destroyed your vines.
Yeah. All this, like this way. All the village, you can see, it's all new roofs.
a bit like being carpet bombed. You're pointing out a sort of corridor of destruction.
And the smell, the vine has a special smell when you cut it, and this felt like blood to me, you know. And I was walking down and my sister was waiting for me on the grass patch there just to see it. So there was a crying, and in 15 minutes your life is I'm gonna say gone, but no. But yeah, for 3 months I wasn't very much here, because you're just a shock.
In just a quarter of an hour, their lives were turned upside down. Marie-Caroline and her sister decided they had to stop. Now, it's forbidden to just abandon your vines in case they become diseased and infect others. This year, the French authorities had a scheme offering between 6 and 8,000 euros a hectare for vines to be pulled up. The sisters felt they had little choice.
But it's 100 years of history gone.
Yeah. It wasn't hard for me. It was hard for my mum. It was hard for others. When we say to others that we're stopping the activity, we're like, you can't do that. There were always vines here. It's like, well, maybe tomorrow there will be tomatoes, you know? It's like, you can't. It's like, yes, I can't. You know, and it was very hard for the older people who, you know, lived around here, or my mom worked here for so many years. And I was like, yeah, but if I can't, I actually, it has to stop.
Marie-Caroline's trying to reinvent herself, along with the chateau, as a place for bed and breakfast and for events like weddings and conferences. She's kept 3 hectares of vines, partly as window dressing for the chateau, though there is still a demand for her best wines. And that's the irony. Despite all the challenges, it's said that Bordeaux is producing better wine than ever. Though here, not far from the Atlantic Ocean, it's been wet, too wet recently, leading to problems with fungal infections like mildew. And it was raining when we met Estelle Roumage.
Please. This is the winery. So this is the older part of the winery where my granddad used to work in. It's made of cement vats.
Wow.
And that's the one we use now to make all the whites and rosés. So if you look here.
Yeah, and there is an amazing smell of some grape juice. So basically, we've got a whole line of big tanks. And this is where the juice goes initially.
Exactly.
So they're about 10 foot tall. They're square or rectangular. And you say you've got 19 of them here.
Yeah, we can really separate the different juices from the different plots. So up to the end of the fermentation, we keep everything separate. So Sauvignon Blanc, for example, is going to be separate from Semillon, all the different grape varieties. And we'll only make the final blend before bottling.
Mm. And that's the skill as well, to get the right blend.
Yeah.
It's, and as you say, this like this tank here has 101 hectolitres.
Mm-hmm.
That's 13, quite a lot of liquid.
That's 13,000 bottles.
13,000 bottles more or less, in one tank.
Yeah, okay. In one tank. But you have very small tanks on the other side there that can only hold 3,000 bottles.
Estelle's family's been making wine at Château Lestrie since 1901. Their 38 hectares of vineyards lie in the well-regarded Entre-deux-Mers sub-region of Bordeaux. The area gets its name from the two tidal rivers that embrace it, the Garonne and the Dordogne.
What stage are you at in your process?
So we've just finished harvesting everything. Everything is in, so it can rain now.
It is raining.
It is raining.
So that's actually the sound of the grape crusher being cleaned out. So this year's harvest, how was it?
It's been a relatively cool year this year. So because we're certified organic, we've had to really fight against mildew, which is really our worst enemy in the vineyard. But the team has done a fantastic job, and we've come out this way with really mature grapes and a very a fantastic potential in terms of aromatics. And so it's... For now, it's all looking really good.
Have you lost a lot?
So this year, we've probably lost, between 20 and 25%. We don't know yet because the reds are still in the vats and we don't know exactly how much we're going to get.
20 to 25%, almost a quarter.
Yeah, that's a lot. But over the past 7 years, my average crop has been 65%. Only
of the
yields that you're allowed per hectare. So that has a lot of impact on our production costs and on the price at which we need to sell our wines if we want to be sustainable, if we want the companies to survive.
And can you still remain profitable at 65% of your production?
It's very difficult.
Is it because of the weather and disease, like mildew?
Yeah, but mostly weather. Late frost in spring, it's due to hail, it's due to mildew, it's due to so many different things that we used to be free of. But now that we have 1.5 degrees more in temperatures, the buds come out much earlier. You can already see a tiny, tiny bunch of grapes in the making. And if a frost comes on top of that, it can really kill everything. And it looks just as if you had had a fire.
I mean, can you do anything?
Yes. There's things you can do, but they're so costly that we can't afford them. So some vineyards can afford to, light candles.
All along the vines.
In the vineyards. But those candles, their costs per night is 2,000 euros. So if you have 38 hectares like we have, it's 76,000 euros. And that's only the cost of buying the candles. And that's for one night. And usually when you have frost, it's two or three nights in a row. And it's just... totally unaffordable for us.
The worry about climate change is such that scientists have been trying to come up with solutions. Agnès Détraque-Irvin has a project called VitaDapt, based in Bordeaux's Scientific Institute of the Vine and Wine.
And VitaDapt, just here,
Since 2009, they've been growing 52 different grape varieties on an experimental plot. The aim is to see how each cope in a changing climate.
And we can see line upon line of vines.
Each five plants, we change varieties.
It's the end of the season, white grapes there, yeah.
Coming from Georgia.
From Georgia?
Georgia.
Recatsiteli.
Recatsiteli white.
Wow. But then next door I can see black grapes.
Vinao variety from Portugal. Carignan,
which Carignan is from the south of France. Yeah.
South of France, and as you can see, very, very sensitive to mildew. Look, yeah. This mildew impact at a very early
stages, yes. Look, before the grape could develop, really.
You imagine?
Yeah. So instead of a bunch of grapes, you get a dried stick with some knobbly dried... I guess those would have been grapes, but they're not at all.
Yeah, Grenache, Carignan, Merlot. Merlot is very sensitive.
To mildew.
Yeah, catastrophe.
How many grape varieties do you say there are in the world?
More than 6,000.
More than 6,000?
Identified in the world. This is a lab. It's in this room that we analyze the grapes that we collect in the vineyard.
Agnès and her team have been measuring all kinds of things, the sugar, the acidity and nitrogen levels in the grapes, their sensitivity to water stress and disease.
It does look rather scientific to me.
The plant life cycle has been changing.
Everything happened earlier in the season. The problem of the advance is that the maturity occurs under highest temperatures. That had an impact on the composition of the berries with more sugar, less acidity. And then when you transform the berries to wine, it's also a disequilibrated wine with more alcohol and less
imbalanced
freshness.
Wine.
Unbalanced wine, yeah. Exactly.
Because so, you need the right amount of acidity and sugar.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the idea of the 52 varieties was to study the capacity of adaptation and behavior of different varieties coming from area with higher temperature than Bordeaux temperatures. And the idea was to see that if they are able to produce very good wine in their original area, maybe they are also able to produce good wine in Bordeaux, and then can help the wine growers in Bordeaux to re-equilibrate those unbalanced wines.
Okay. So, in simple terms, you're saying climate change is making the grapes ripen earlier.
Yes.
But that affects the taste, in effect.
Yes.
Following experiments like Agnès's, the Bordeaux wine authorities have approved a further 6 varieties which can be used in local appellations, though only in small quantities. They could help producers rebalance their wine. But climate change isn't the only challenge facing winemakers. French society, too, is changing. This is The Documentary from the BBC World Service. I'm John Murphy on assignment in France. Amid the grandeur of the centre of Bordeaux, a city built on centuries of trading, notably in wine, I've turned to an expert in all things concerning the grape. Colin Gent has lived here for 25 years, working in the wine industry and lecturing on it at the Kedge Business School. He's also a Master of Wine, a prestigious qualification. There are just 400 of them in the world. Climate change is a problem, he says, but there's another big issue.
If you want to look at where the crisis is, I would probably look more at the problems on the demand side. Demand is going down more and more rapidly. And that's demand within the domestic French market, but that's also demand internationally now. And we're looking at an accelerating process of falling demand. I think the problem for the French wine industry is to say, well, when's that going to stop?
In the 1960s, it's estimated wine consumption in France worked out at a whopping 160 bottles per adult per year. For those actually doing the drinking, that's a lot of glasses.
There was actually this all-consuming idea that wine was something nutritious, a calorie and mineral supplement, a vitamin supplement. I mean, it used to be said, I think it's absolutely amazing, until the 50s, wine was served in school canteens to small children. In 1953, they actually banned serving wine in canteens to under 14s. Only in 1981 did they actually ban in high schools.
Since those heady days, overall wine consumption in France has dropped dramatically. Today, it's around 50 bottles per adult per year and still going down.
In France, we're talking about a 20% drop in demand in the last 10 years. And that is very, very scary for the French wine industry because we weren't expecting that. The decline in red wine consumption is much more. And it's a very recent phenomenon. I saw retail figures that said that red wine consumption in retail outlets, notably the supermarkets, is down 30% in just the last 6-7 years. That's a massive cultural change.
And that's young people not drinking?
You can look at various different factors. There's a tendency to eat less red meat, particularly among young generations. And in France, it was sort of de rigueur. If you had red meat on the table, you almost needed the wine. But generally, there are generational changes. Younger people are drinking less. They've got more other choices as well. There's more fashionable, higher quality craft beers and artisanal spirits. And people used to take 2-hour lunch breaks and drink a whole bottle of wine during their lunch. That stopped. People now take a sandwich. What's also changing maybe in the evenings now is the destructuration of formal sitting down at a table with the other people in your house, eating a proper meal and putting a bottle of wine on the table at that moment. That's something that's changing.
Talking about culture, when we think of France, we tend to think of baguettes and cheese and wine. Mm-hmm. Wine seems to be integral to what France is. Is it going to remain like that?
That's the question we're all asking ourselves.
Some may think of the wine world as a bit stuffy, stuck in its ways, but it's always been changing. And today, many winemakers are adapting to a different drinking culture. Less red wine, more whites and rosés. But switching production takes years and is expensive. Some, like Estelle at Château Lestrée, are better placed to cope, and her region is famous for its whites.
When I came back on the estate, my dad had 2 hectares of whites, and now we have 15. So we've really increased the quantity of whites that we make.
So you've reduced red production.
Yes, yes.
Is that because people are drinking less
red? I really started because that's what I love making as well. Okay. I really enjoy making white wines, and it happened, and I was very lucky, that it's easier now to sell whites and rosés than reds.
And would you say that you here, Château Lestrée, is doing okay?
We're probably doing better than a lot of our colleagues around here because we sell direct customers.
So that's the trick, to sell direct.
It's one of the tricks.
As opposed to going through some middle person somewhere along the line.
Exactly. And the second, I would say that probably the second thing that helps us through this crisis is the fact that we've diversified our production with whites and rosés and crémant as well.
Which is a fizzy wine.
Yes, yep. Exactly.
Estelle grows her own grapes, ages the wine, bottles it, markets it and sells it directly to her clients. She's changed what she makes, but all that isn't easy. There are plenty of winemakers right across the country who don't have the time, the resources or the will to do it. We're travelling further south, to Languedoc, the region that produces more than a third of France's wine.
I'm not worried. Will we still be drinking wine in 5, 10 or 15 years? Yes. Will it be consumed all over the world? Yes, and more of it. Will it be the same wine my parents and grandparents made? No. And will it be the same in 25 years' time? Only the future will tell.
Jean-Marie Fabre is the president of the Vignerons Indépendants de France, essentially the small-scale family farms who make up the majority of wine producers in the country. He's a winemaker too.
We're walking down a row of these vines, but he's pointing out that some of the plants have simply not produced any grapes this year. There's one with almost no leaves on it. And the leaves are dry, as he says. You can hear that. It's heartbreaking. Ça fait mal au cœur.
Oui, ça fait mal au cœur parce que
He's talking about these plants as if they're children, planted by his grandparents, by him, by his great-grandparents. And he says it's as if we're tied with an umbilical cord to each of these plants. So it really is heartbreaking. And the real problem is we're powerless to do anything about it.
Jean-Marie's asking the government to support winemakers now to help them adapt and survive. Better to spend money today, he says, to avoid a greater crisis in the future.
Pour s'adapter, il faut aussi des moyens pour s'adapter.
To adapt, you also need the means to adapt. There are people who no longer have the strength, no longer have the money or the desire to do so. They're at the end of their tether and they'll have to stop. That's 20%, and our job is to help them stop with dignity. There's another 80% of the sector, which is full of young, dynamic men and women with the desire and the vision to continue. Some of them need short-term help, the oxygen to carry on and survive, and they'll be the entrepreneurs we rely on in the future.
You can see the soil is black. It's the first hills of the Pyrenees. We are 25 kilometers from the Mediterranean Sea.
We're back with Sébastien in the vineyards of Danjou-Bénissy in Roussillon, not far from the city of Perpignan. He and his brother are employing a range of techniques to try to confront the changing climate in their area, the hot winds and the lack of rainfall.
There are these lines and lines of quite short vines. Yep. These are young vines.
They are not vines yet.
Okay.
They are roots. This is the first adaptation to the climate change. One of the solutions is to plant first roots so that it can make nice roots and try to adapt. And after 1 or 2 years, we can graft the variety we have decided, we have chosen for this type of land.
So it's a long process.
It's a very long process. Of course, it's much longer than buying from the nursery.
And what you're pointing out is amongst these rolling hills, there are different vineyards of different ages and at different stages of production. And this is the super early stage.
This is the before beginning. Yeah,
and this is something you've had to do because of the climate change that's been happening.
This is something my grandfather taught us to do. It's one solution, but it's not the solution. For me, it's the addition of small solutions that enables to sometimes cope with this climate change.
Sébastien shows us hedges he's planted to shield the vines from storm winds and new trees whose long roots draw up moisture from deep in the soil, so helping the vines.
It is a cloudy day today. It's not raining, but to me, this is a beautiful scene. Different fields of vineyards, and in the distance, the cloud is hanging low over the hills. But you can see some problems in this landscape.
Yes, a lot of trees have died.
From lack of water.
From lack of water. Last year, to give you an example, it rained as much as in the Sahel Desert. There are some vines which died, so we replace every year.
In fact, here we can see in this field, there are lots of ancient-looking vines, quite tall, about a metre and a half tall. Gnarled.
Yeah, it's a vine which is more than 100 years old.
But next to them, dotted around, there are these baby little vines.
Yeah. They will adapt themselves if they have time to adapt. The problem is that it's so brutal, the rapidity of this change, that we cannot cope. We won't have time to adapt. That's our fear. That's what we fear most.
What about your particular harvest this year? How's it been?
Well, qualitatively, a very good quality, but on a quantitative point of view, very bad. There's not enough. It's 50%. Yeah. Wow. 30% last year, 50% this year.
Here in Languedoc-Roussillon, the problem is a severe lack of water. In other regions like Bordeaux, it's been too much rain, frost, hail and disease. And then there are changing drinking habits and tastes. For years, France has been producing more wine than it can sell. So an overall cut in production may be no bad thing, quality over quantity. But that could make wine even more of a luxury item. Your bottle may well go up in price. And for many of the small family-owned vineyards producing less well-known wines, the changes could simply be a catastrophe.
So you've been making wine for 20 years. The conditions are awful and getting worse, it seems. Why do you keep going? What makes you keep going?
Because it's our life. It's our life. I am optimistic because hopefully there are natural solutions. I hope there are solutions. But of course, the landscape is going to evolve. Of course, we will have to plant perhaps less vines. Of course, the quantity we have been used to vinify, to make, won't be the same. But I'm 45 years old now. I work in the vines of my great-grandfather. Everything I do today, I do it for the next generation. So for me, the work planting trees, planting hedges, planting woods, planting vines, taking care of the earth is for the future generations. It's part of our job. We will continue. We will always take care of the earth now. I cannot do something else. It's a way of life. It's an art of living for me.
That's Assignment from Southern France. I'm John Murphy. The producer was Alex Last. It was mixed by Rod Farker. Gemma Ashman is the production coordinator, and the series editor is Penny Murphy.